Welcome back to the Inside Trail. This week I was joined by James McCormack, entrepreneur and the owner of the Dublin Barista School. I really, really enjoyed it in there this morning. Had some great coffee, thank you very much. I didn't get to crack a monster, but I am having one now, so I'm making up for it. I really enjoyed my chat this morning, all about, you know, entrepreneurship, you know, the ins and outs of it, and not just, you know, here's the millions I made, or here's my profits, here's my net, you know. It's nice for someone being so honest about their whole journey, and, you know, we talk about failure, we talk about lots of different stuff, and, you know, it was actually, you know, one of my more enjoyable conversations that I've had on the podcast. So, to be honest, I actually hope you all enjoy it. I have a couple more podcasts now in the next couple of weeks, so I hope you're listening in. Other than that, hit that subscribe button, and we'll grow this podcast together. Cheers. How are we? Welcome back to the Inside Trail. Today we are joined by
James McCormack,
and we're going to have a little spew today about, you know, the Dublin Barista School, which we're shooting in now. We're going to talk about entrepreneurship, how to get there, and, you know, the journey along the way, as a young entrepreneur, how you get into it, all that kind of crap. So hopefully you take something from today, and, you know, I have a great man here beside me who we've been chatting beforehand, and it seems like you know his stuff. So,
I don't really know anything, actually.
Well, you know the basics anyway. You know more than I do.
I can talk about it now because I've got 10 years business experience or entrepreneurship experience in my belt. So I feel that I'm in a position now that I can actually offer people value.
And advice.
Advice is a difficult one, but definitely value as in learning from the things that I've learned from, and kind of the, I suppose, becoming an entrepreneur is a word, or the word entrepreneur, to start there, is a word that's been kind of thrown around quite a lot, and it's been kind of publicized as something that's cool and a reality. Like, there's nothing really cool about it per se, because it's like anything that you want to achieve in life. It's hard work, it's working by yourself, it's lonely, you know, you get the shit kicked out of you most days, emotionally, and, you know, it's difficult, and the survival rate is very low. So, like, I come through 10 years of entrepreneurship, and feeling proud that I got to 10 years, yeah. But knowing that, you know, tomorrow isn't guaranteed to anybody. Yeah. I mean, anything can happen. You know, I'm going to have my fifth company this year. So, as in that I started.
Yeah.
So, in Dublin Barista School has always been kind of one of the companies that I started at the beginning.
So, why don't we start there? So, when did this place open?
The Barista School as a concept started in 2011.
Okay.
And it kind of started before that. Like, coffee wasn't ever on my radar as an entrepreneur. And so there's something that happened. And in today's world, when you hear all the guys doing the motivational talks on Instagram and all the motivational videos, it's like, find your passion, find your passion. Mm. For me, at the beginning, it wasn't passion that was driving me necessarily, that I can think of. It was survival. Mm. I was like, I need to make money to survive. And that was the crux of the matter. In December 2008, I was made redundant. And from there, I had to make a decision. I just got a massive mortgage on a house. I was a mortgage broker, so I was able to facilitate myself. to get a loan to buy a house with my now wife, and I had basically as an employee of a company, I had racked up a mortgage, which is a big debt. That's kind of like a life debt, I suppose. And also, I'd made mistakes getting credit cards and loans that I didn't necessarily need, like I had a car loan, I had a credit card that I didn't need. So I kind of became redundant with debt, even though I got a payout. So that wasn't a good place to start, because I had all these liabilities coming at me all the time, and I didn't have the money then to kind of pay for it. And then I also had to make a decision at that time, what do I do? Do I go and look for a job in a bank? Which was difficult because the unemployment rate was going to go up to whatever it was, like 12, 13, I can't remember exactly, 14%, which is now it's extremely, it's the lowest it's ever been today. So jobs were at a premium back then. And would I get one? Possibly, I don't know. Did I want to work for somebody else? I don't think I did, because I ended up where I am today. I wasn't a great employee before that. I had a number of jobs that I was rubbish at, until I found something that I was good at, which was sales. And I was really good at sales because, I don't know, I think I like, metrics attract me. I like knowing that if I have a goal, I can achieve it. And a numbers goal is much easier to achieve if you can see it and you know what you have to do. And I worked for a great company who trained me how to become a good salesman. And it's all metrics, it's all numbers. The amount of people you call, the amount of meetings you have, you know, that's going to equate eventually into a sale.
Yeah.
So just the more that you do, the more doors you knock on, the more success. And I had, because I come to a period of failure with other jobs, I had like a hunger. And so whenever I went into this company, I was on the phones, I was ringing, I was working 7 days a week. I had that work ethic. And when I came out of it then, when I got made redundant, the whole company got made redundant. 150 people reduced to 10, pretty much. And that's where I had to make the decision about what I did. So my wife said, follow, you need to do this, because I was always talking about starting my own business, no idea what I wanted to do. And with 500 euros that she lent me, the two of us decided that, you know, what was a company that we could start? It wasn't, I have a passion for this.
Yeah.
It was like, what could we do with 500 euros? It's
practical, like.
And the lowest barrier to entry industry for us at the time was food and making sandwiches. And no one else was doing this. No one was making sandwiches and delivering them into offices. Okay, there was catering companies, but so I started a company called Good Mood Food, and I started to be successful making sandwiches and delivering them. That's what I did first. It was just me for the first 10 months, starting at 5, finishing at whatever it was, 3 in the afternoon. I was subletting a kitchen. So that's part of the what we can talk about young entrepreneurs. Like,
that was your first business.
That was my first business, and that went pretty well. I was just working. It was easy when you're working by yourself. Everything is simple. You don't have people to manage. You're just managing yourself. You know, everything is relatively easy. So all I had to do was do something I was good at, which was selling. I had to improve the product, which was the sandwich. That got better as time went on. I started.
What's your sandwich made scales like?
They're pretty animal these days.
Yeah. Where?
So, at the beginning it was terrible, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Literally didn't have a clue what I was doing, and people were giving me feedback and I was trying to improve.
Yeah.
And it's nothing more simple than I always made sure I had fresh bread every single morning, fresh out of the oven. Pat the Baker wasn't expensive bread.
Yeah.
Good quality ingredients. And then as we progressed through the years, I had a coffee shop on Leeson Street where we made pretty good sandwiches, and just learned there's a real skill in making sandwiches. It sounds like such a simple thing, but there's a real skill. And then when we started to scale it up a little bit, going from individual sandwiches to lunch platters, that's when we were serving 20, 30 people at a time rather than one person. So we had to put into boxes and we had to make it look beautiful and do all that type of stuff. And that was a learning curve. And so I had to employ people who had that skill set.
Yeah.
But that business became extremely logistical, and it's a fast moving goods, basically. So you're fast moving logistically. People need pastries at 7:30 in the morning. They need lunch at 11:30. And then you might be delivering to 30 companies at 11:30, and you have to figure that out logistically. So I learned a huge amount about logistics, stock ordering, stock control, and all those kind of really key
things. Planning, I'd say, goes into that.
planning is, yeah, so like even today my planning skills are quite good because yeah. like there's always that pressure. You always have to think about the details, like small details, like especially in catering, when like did they get their napkins, did they, you know, like stuff mm-hmm. that's immaterial when you're normally thinking about things, like, but stuff that's important to the customer. And and always, even in today's business, and what I bring as a business person is like the number one thing that we want to do is either we want to make a profit, obviously, as a company, but we need customers to do that. And how do we retain our customers and keep them coming back into us as a coffee business, as a training school? We sell coffee on Amazon now. Yeah. So how do we keep our customers coming back to us? It's always a big question, and there's a skill in doing that. And it's down to details normally, I find. How was your tone in the email that you were sending to the customer? How did you react when the customer kind of gave out about the coffee downstairs, you know? Mm-hmm. So all those types of things and that are important. That's why training has been so important for us over the years, in terms of training our staff up to a level that they're able to retain our customers. So going back, Good Mood Food was where I started, and that's where I kind of like learned a lot about business. And during that period, so I started in November the 4th, 2009, actually was my first day when selling. I think that was the date. And then not 10 months later, I took over a coffee shop, which was on Leeson Street. I didn't know anything about coffee, so that's how I got into coffee, but it wasn't on purpose. It was kind of, I was looking for a place to expand the sandwich business, because that was all that was on my mind at the time, was sandwiches. I took over a cafe. You have to remember, at that time, 2010, it was recession, height of the recession. Today, the environment is completely different to the economic environment, and everything is going to be different to what it was like then. Everyone was saying that we were mad getting in business. But one of the best things that ever happened to us was the timing of it. For me, was the recessionary times were actually the best time for me to start a business. But as I look at the environment today, I'm like, it's very difficult to start coffee shop businesses now because of the massive rents, because of the, like, I don't know if you know this, but when you go out for lunch anywhere, it's like 15 euros, like, and 10 years ago, it was like half that price.
Yeah.
So I'm even looking at like going out for lunch now, and the economy is just mad, and I just can't see how it's going to continue that way.
Yeah. Surely we'll have to go back down again eventually.
I think so. I'm just going to open this sparkling water here. So starting a business in a recession was a blessing in disguise, because I was able to negotiate really good deals.
Yeah.
Like, I took over a cafe in 2010 that was fully kitted out. I didn't have to invest any money into it, apart from the little bit from my kitchen and stuff. But it wasn't like 50 grand, it was kind of like a couple of thousand euros for fridges and stuff like that. So it wasn't like an unbelievable investment. And they were just, that was what it was like back then. And I started coffee, opened up a 60-seater cafe, which I had no experience of running a cafe. I knew how to deliver sandwiches. That was my expertise at that time.
And you were still doing the Good Mood Food when you had opened this cafe?
Yeah, so Good Mood Food was out in Stillorgan in a sublet kitchen. And then basically the subletting situation was that I had the kitchen from 5 until 11 or 12 or something like that. I can't really remember exactly. But I started getting so busy that I was kind of like, kept on creeping into the time, and I was getting busier than the company that was actually had the building there. It was just a catering kitchen, and I was taking up more space, so they were getting annoyed, and they basically asked me to leave then eventually, so I had to kind of go out and find my own premises, and that's how I got into Good Mood Food on Leeson Street, as some people may remember. And I was there for 4 years, and then so I learned, that's where I started learning coffee. And from that location as well, our catering business kind of like blew up, and we started from Sandyford. We had the Sandyford Industrial Estate, and in town now we had access to mostly corporate clients. So the big accounting firms, the big solicitor firms who need sandwiches for board meetings and staff meetings, and we started doing that. And we had a team of like four guys just working in our kitchen, making. We had two guys delivering, so it was a nice operation. And hindsight is always amazing when you're looking back at these things and say, I really could have dominated that market if I know then what I know now.
Yeah.
And that's what happened, because in 2011, or yeah, just early 2011, this is keeping on the timeline, which is always a little bit confusing. Bill Cullen, who I don't know if you know, if you ever heard of Bill Cullen, he's quite famous, and he had a playset in the Europa Academy in Zurich.
Grandson quite well.
What's that?
I know his grandson quite well.
Oh, really? Yeah.
That's cool.
Okay. So you know about him. He was an extremely wealthy guy, very successful guy. And a friend of mine who used to work with asked me to come out and run their kitchen. And that's how I went out then to Swords and started operating in Swords as well for a period. not as successfully as here, but I was there for 2 years in Swords, and basically that kind of started stretching me logistically, because I now had to travel from Storgan
to Swords,
from city centre to Swords, which, as you know, is a bit of a trek.
Yeah, 25 kilometres or something like that.
So yeah. I didn't think about that at the time. I was like, yep, business, take it. And it's all good. And it was good, it was a great experience. And it's great kind of getting to know Bill Cullen and Jack Gavin, and those guys were operating at a high level. And unfortunately then, the recession kind of caught up with that business and they had to close it. So I eventually left there. But in the early days I was opportunity. I'm still, opportunity is still here. I'm still the same amount of opportunities there. But at the early days, when opportunities came to me, I said yes to absolutely everything. And it wasn't like, no, no, no. It was like, yes, give it to me. I'm able for it. And as a guy who was inexperienced, it was not an advisable move to make, because I didn't have anyone there telling me.
Yeah, and is that something that you would encourage or discourage, you know, to be at the start? You know, you seem very excited to get involved in this, that, and that. And you're saying yes. Would you... Obviously, you probably don't regret it, because that's how you get to where you are. But for someone in your position at that age, would you have really grabbed on to everything, or would you have taken?
Like, there's a common trait with very successful people, and usually what I've noticed from talking to people over the last while is that the guys who succeed are the guys who have people behind them giving them good advice. And telling them, and not telling them, but just guiding them. You know, that could be a mentor, it could be a silent partner in the business, or it could be a parent who's experienced, it could be somebody who's got the relevant knowledge behind them. And I think that's always more advisable. I don't know if I had that behind me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was there and I ignored advice.
Yeah.
Do you know the way people tell you stuff and you just kind of like...
And you just kind of...
And that could have been arrogance, it could have been stress, could have been whatever it was, just ignoring people. But I don't really remember getting that, and I don't remember asking people either, so it's also twofold. My father had passed away, my mother had just passed away, and my wife's father, my father-in-law, should I say, he was there, a very experienced guy, and he had given me some advice, but I didn't go back and look for more advice. And that's kind of one of the important things. And mentorship is great, but it's not the be all and end all of business, but you still have to make the decisions yourself. But just to have somebody there giving you the options, well, what if you go this way, and what if you don't do that, and what are the implications if you do take that on? Like, there was no foresight for me thinking about, if I take on that place in Swords, how is it going to affect everything?
Mm.
All I was thinking of was, there's another 200 grand or there's another whatever it is that I could make.
I suppose it's very hard to, if you're, you know, when you're this close to it and you have, and they can kind of see a bigger picture when you can just see this. And
that's been the learning curve as well as a business leader. I'm the one who's legally responsible for my decisions and for the decisions for people that we employ. So if we employ 20 people in this company.
Just keep going. I'm on it just because that's a chain of 20.
You're nearly there, I'd say.
18.
I forgot what I was saying there.
You are legally...
I'm responsible for the business, so like I have to now look into the future, and I have to have foresight, and I have to think about the decisions, how they're going to affect the company and how they're going to affect cash reserves or cash flow. So these are all important things that I didn't think about in the early days, and I just said yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
And that kind of went on to a friend of mine came to me who was a business owner as well. Would you like to, have you thought about coffee training? I said, no, but let's do it. I said, London Barista School started.
Yeah.
And I went to London and did a course just because I wasn't that experienced.
And you just trained as a barista?
Yeah, I did a barista training. Now, I had at this stage got the machines in the shop and I was serving people coffee, and we had all that. That's why my friend came to me, was he had an English school. So he was already in education, and he matched education and coffee, and it was his
idea. Two together.
And like, I wasn't really thinking about it, but I said, yeah, let's do it, and went over to London. I did the training, and we put the curriculum together, very basic. And that's how the barista school started. And from day one, that business kind of was good.
Thriving.
Education is, I would say, recession-proof, because people always are eager to learn and better themselves. And then in a recession, the other thing happens, that they need the training to get a job, because the jobs market is much more competitive. So you go to, from whatever it is, 3% unemployment right now to 13%, what's going to happen when we hit recession again, or that was what happened in during the last recession. And so there's less jobs for people. What do they do? They need to upskill and need to train. And so that's why our business kind of went well at the beginning, because we were in a recession. And then coming out of a recession, it's still the same thing. Now there's more jobs.
Yeah.
And the cafes don't want to take people on unless they have either experience or training. So like it works both ways in both kind of economies. So a recession or a thriving economy. So we're still doing well, and we've grown on the back of that. So the education business has been great from that perspective. But 2012, my same friend came to me. What happened in my business world was my mother had passed away in 2011, and I was overwhelmed with this emotion to, or I suppose you can call it an emotion, to look after people and to be aggressive and to look after my family and to basically become the patriarch of my family, because my father and my mother now, there was a missing person in our family. Okay, so parental figure.
Yeah.
I took it upon myself in my head to fill that void. So I went back to that kitchen I subletted in Stillorgan I was telling you about, and I bought the lease over. I bought all our equipment in order to, because I wanted to aggressively expand the business and show people what a great person I was, and you know, and all this type of stuff. Turned out to be a wrong decision for that particular business, because I was putting Good Mood Food back in there to redevelop it. Again, it was a decision made out of emotion. It wasn't actually a practical decision. And what happened was then my friend came to me, what about Mexican food? Mexican food was going through an explosion in the about 2012, 2013. So we said, yeah, let's do that. And so we put in El Porco Loco, which was my third business in there. So now we had three businesses operating within the space of kind of 3 years, very inexperienced. And what transpired over the next 3 years of that business was I learned a lot about the ins and outs of running a company, and about leadership, management, cash flow, money, revenue. There's so many different aspects I learned about. Culminated into me having to liquidate the company. I had to let 20 people go. My partnership with my friend Simon had dissipated. We fell apart. And he left essentially, and so in 2016 I was this bag of anxiety and stress. And if you look at me, if I was sitting here in 2016, I would have been 20 kilos heavier.
Really?
I was overweight. I would have been plus 30% body fat. I would have been drinking most days, probably eating takeaway 5 days. Well, I was eating outside every day, like whether it be lunch or takeaways.
Yeah.
No exercise, and I was just living in this kind of, just not a nice place.
Shadows.
Shadows, and just generally, like, there was no clarity, there was no focus. I was like, because my body wasn't operating properly, I wasn't able to deal with the stress, I wasn't able to extract myself and think, how do I get out of this? So But like, I'm not saying it was the worst thing to happen. I liquidated El Porco Loco after we opened two premises, one in Stillorgan and one in the square in Talla. It was an amazing experience. Unfortunately, I didn't have the skills to keep it going. We liquidated the company, not owing anybody any money. So that's important to say as well, that we didn't owe millions of euros.
Yeah.
But I actually ended up closing it down more for sanity because I knew I was incapable of running the business. And the one in Stillorgan was making a profit. So that was actually ticking along.
Yeah.
And the other one in Talla, just we couldn't make it work, even though we had a great business there and it looked great. And we had great, we did everything right. But you can't foresee
everything.
A demographic not wanting your food, or maybe we were in the wrong place in the square, or I don't know. I still don't know the reason, but so that business culminated, and then in 2016 I was just left with one company, but I let Goodmay Food go as well, within the whole kind of cloud of running multiple businesses, and I left with this business. And I actually came up to this office that we're in now. I had one desk at that wall, and I opened my laptop and I started calling people because that's what I knew I was good at.
Yeah.
To re-kickstart this business, because if there's nobody operating it, if there's no one driving your company, it just sits there.
Mm.
You know? And your staff aren't in a position to drive your company.
No.
Because a lot of them are young baristas. They don't know what's happening. They just expect to be paid at the end of every week, which is fair enough, because they've done a job. So it's not my responsibility to grow the company, to get more people in, some more seats on our training business. So I had to get good at marketing, I had to get good at Facebook advertising, I had to get good at growing our kind of profile on now Instagram, and maybe TikTok, or maybe Snapchat, or maybe whatever the next ones that we need to get good at. That kind of paid off. At that time I came up here, there was a lot of weight lifted off my shoulders. I just had my second child. So you have that kind of feeling of responsibility to your family more so than maybe if you're by yourself. And I just sat and I called and I made good decisions, or better decisions, about how we're going to grow our coffee trade downstairs in our coffee shop, how we're going to increase our traffic to people buying courses, and how do we just build it up. And from that period, the company from 2015, in fact, that happened, I grew the company 100% for 3 years in a row. And that gave me confidence.
Yeah.
And when you start seeing that happening, you say, I'm doing something right, how do I keep that going?
Exactly, yeah.
But then what did I do? Obviously, the man who can't say no to opportunity. I see opportunities all the time. That's what entrepreneurs typically will suffer from, is like, sees too many ideas.
Too many ideas.
And also in a good way, from that period I started coffee roasting, I started a recruitment company, I started it within these walls. So I said, how can we get more revenue streams coming into the company? And that's always a good way to look at things, I think, because when our coffee shop trade drops in the summertime, we still have other revenue streams keeping us going or propping us up, that we're not always relying on that one stream. And that was my major problem I had in the Mexican business. We only really had one stream of revenue, as in people walking in or just eat.
Food.
Or just eat. Now, we tried a lunch delivery corporate thing that worked a little bit, but it wasn't really, so I didn't have multiple streams coming through. So I was always, when that business went, I said, I need more revenue streams. But it was a learning curve. We roasted coffee, I started a subscription business, recruitment, consulting I did for a period. And all these things are, just create a better understanding about what you really need to do. And everything I did over that period of time, what did I do? I came back to the one thing where I started, really, back to education with Dublin Barista School. And now where we are today is driving education. And so focusing on what we're actually focusing on, a market, and going for that market, and not focusing on multiple niche markets within the umbrella of coffee. So what I found myself doing was, under the umbrella of coffee, I was training coffee shops, recruitment, roasting, subscription service. So I had five businesses within
the one thing.
And then you have to make the decision, okay, well, that's great and it all sounds amazing, but I'm not in a position to actually go full throttle on any one of those things. I'm just kind of like growing each one bit by bit.
Yeah.
Unless I go out and find somebody who wants to invest €1 million into me, where I can employ somebody yeah. who's going to drive each of those each aspects of the business. Yeah. It's not really realistic. On paper, it sounds, yeah, that's what you should do. But in reality, in actual fact, it doesn't work. So maybe that is something that we come back to in the future. But right now, we're focusing on education. So we have, we're always busy downstairs in our training room. Our seats are booked out constantly, weeks in advance. So like that's just always works for us, and what we do as a company works for us. And our trainers are very, very skilled, and they're great, excellent trainers. Our curriculum is good, and we help people get jobs at the end of it, and that's kind of what we're experts at. And we have a transition year program where we go into schools, and so we train a lot of TY. And so that's kind of an area that we grow into as well. And from that, like, it's just kind of education. We created, my next company is the World Barista Institute, which is all about online education. So we've built an online course, and we're just putting the final edits to it now and the final touches, but it's going to be a whopper online course.
And is the curriculum essentially the same as what the Dublin Barista School is?
Yeah, so one market that we found it difficult to get into was the B2B market, as in us training other coffee shops and hotels and stuff like that. And as a coffee shop owner, I know that margins are tight. Everyone says there's lots of money in coffee, selling coffee, which there is if you can sell high volume of it. So if we're selling flat whites, I need to sell a hell of a lot of them to make money.
Yeah.
So the business-to-business market is quite kind of restricted here, because people don't have the €500 or €1,000 to spend on staff training, because the other side of it is turnover of staff is quite high in the industry.
Yeah.
So what we've come up with is an online training program that people can afford, and it's giving their staff a reason to stay in the company. So we're investing into our staff. So as part of our customer retention that I spoke about earlier, how do we keep our customers coming back to us? We need to have really good staff, and we need to have them working as a team, and we need to have them enjoy working here. And they need to know that we have their back and that we're going to support them, and we're not just going to ditch them.
Yeah.
So we want to give them something of value, which is a certificate from the World Barista Institute that says that you're at a certain level as a barista, and hopefully that will keep staff retention a little bit longer. You can't keep staff forever, but if it's an extra 6 months or an extra year, that makes a big difference to a business, because you as a customer walk into a coffee shop, you want to see somebody that you know, even if you don't realize it.
Yeah.
It makes you feel more comfortable that you know the barista there, especially if they're good and they like you and they talk to you and stuff.
You have your chat with them, especially when you have your same one that you go back then on. Yeah. I know a lot of my friends personally come here and they're all down in Trinity, and they all book me and they take their Instagram photos outside the door, and they have the, I feel like that is something that you definitely have bang on the head, is that people coming back. And I don't know, it's like some, definitely I know that a lot of students do love this place.
It's become a student haunt, and it wasn't a tactical decision, it's just happens, the way it happened.
Yeah.
You know, as we, I did loads of different things over the years to kickstart our training, our coffee shop downstairs. And for the first 9 months of when we opened in 2013, we couldn't get customers in the door. If you look right there, you have Coffee Angel literally facing us, and they queues out the door, and it was very demoralizing looking out our window and seeing queues out the door. And I would sit in this office and I would look out the window and I would look at people walking out and trying to understand the psychology of people, like, why aren't they coming to us? What are we doing wrong?
Yeah.
I had started blaming the economy, and I say this to people, Coffee Angel, the sun shines on the side of the street. So I was like, oh, it's because the sun is shining on the side of the street.
Yeah.
Like, I was making excuses for why we were failing. And the reason we were failing wasn't because Coffee Angel, what Coffee Angel were actually doing was a good job. And I started to look at the customers' faces as they were walking out, and they wouldn't even look at us. Like, they had no interest in even going to a different coffee shop, because they were so happy going to that coffee shop. And that made me start to understand about the process of customer psychology, and about customer loyalty and about why do customers come into coffee shops. And I realized we had done everything wrong downstairs. We had the wrong staff, we had the wrong coffee bean, we had the wrong attitude. So I had to make a decision. So I basically did a sweep.
A revamp.
A complete sweep. So I had to let all of our staff go. And I changed our coffee supplier. And I reduced our price because I had to get customers. So unfortunately, pricing is a thing that works.
Yeah.
If you do something cheaper, you're going to get a certain amount of customers coming in. So we put all of our coffees at €2 for a period of time. I think it was may have been, I don't know, less than a year we did it for. And we went from 50 coffees a day over that year to like 300 coffees a day. And based not just on the price, but having staff who weren't necessarily coffee experts, but who were just able to smile and talk to people and who were nice.
People
and,
manage.
Yeah, and that was how we grew our initial customer base. And then I started doing the maths on it. I said, okay, if we have 300, if we're selling 300 coffees a day now and I put up the price, I know I'm going to lose 10 or 15% of these customers, but I know now, I started to believe in our process that, that more customers are going to come to us because our service is really good, and that strategy worked until we changed everything downstairs, new equipment, new staff, until we were employing really nice staff who were actually excellent at making coffee as well. So they were top baristas and they were lovely people. So that's the kind of the mix that you want to get. It doesn't matter if it's coffee or any business, I think. And that's a really great formula. And so customers come here for customer service. I believe, anyway, our customers are coming in the door because of the good customer service they get. Because our workflow is really efficient most of the time, not all the time. And our coffee is extremely consistent. So we're getting pretty much the same drink every time you come in. And you don't have to worry about, oh, is milk going to be too hot? Or is the milk going to be too cold? Or is it going to be too weak or too strong? Or is it going to taste like, you know, fish? Or, which is a real thing in coffee, tasting like fish.
Really?
I don't know if you've ever had a coffee that smelled like or tastes like fish.
That's pretty good. Off that my baristas have looked after me,
But like, that's... like, life isn't complicated, and I think we overcomplicate things. It's nothing more than those three things I can see. And I, as a business owner, then look at those three things and I manage the metrics and say, okay, are we paying too much on labor? Are we using too much stock versus the money that we're bringing in? Are we wasting too much stock? So then I manage metrics and I look at the figures, and that gives me an indication about how we're performing. And then I know at the end of a week how much, not to the cent, but I know pretty closely how much profit or loss that we made. And that's my job to do then. And so it's not really overly complicated.
Okay.
There's obviously lots of other details like branding and marketing and stuff that you have to get involved in. But, you know, from that aspect, it's not complicated.
So I've two other questions just for you before we move on to our couple of different sections, right? So... first is the importance of failure. Tell me.
So I wrote a thing about this on my Instagram. And like everything I write on my Instagram isn't about promoting myself. It's just stuff that I've learned over the last 10 years. And when I look back over the last 10 years, I can often kind of get annoyed at myself about the journey that I took for some reason, because it's like retrospective looking, it's like, oh, I wish I'd done that differently. And I did everything wrong, literally. And I still do things wrong, but I do less things wrong these days.
Yeah, fair.
But I made so many mistakes, and I'd failed so many times, like I had two failed companies. And I let that get in on me, I let failure get in on me, and I used to think that it was very much a negative thing, and that I wasn't good, and I would look at other people, I'd look at my competition, and I'd say, they're so far ahead of me, and I would let that eat away at me, and I would let that create anxiety, and I would let that create kind of a lack of confidence or self-belief in the decisions that I was making. But in actual fact, now when I look back, and about 2 years ago, I went in this whole personal development phase. I was telling you that I was overweight and was drinking a lot. And 2 years ago, I changed. I listened to Tony Robbins. Somebody gave me his back catalogue of all of his stuff, and I started listening to it. in June 2017, and it literally went by changed my life 180 degrees from every aspect. And I think like a lot of the aspects like of changing my health, my food and my fitness helped me kind of change my mindset towards how I perceive things.
Yeah. Stops on 21, yeah. 20, 46 there, that was a nice, grab.
Nice changeover.
Yeah.
And the failure aspect of it was always kind of eating away at me. I'd failed, I'd liquidated a company, I'm not good enough, I'm shit. This is my internal voice talking to myself. And you're not good enough. And you know, like you just kind of take the self-pity route. And which isn't positive for anybody.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that kind of leaks out into my family life, and I go home and a bit of a knob at home because I'm moody and I'm anxious, and you know, and I'm a bit of an asshole to my staff probably because I'm in the same type of a mood.
Yeah.
I'm short. I have no patience with people. I'm expecting more than my expectation of people is more than it should be. Mm. And it's all my fault because I haven't trained them properly. You know, so it's all this kind of thing that. You know, it's and what it is called is entitlement. I felt I was entitled to have other people doing better jobs, but I haven't actually put in the work to train them properly. So, and I'm just expecting people to kind of read my mind and know what they're supposed to be doing. So, that's the definition of an asshole. and I went through this change and I started like realizing and I started like going onto social media. In a positive way and following people who are speaking positively about life and stuff. And
like-minded people, like?
Just different people. Yeah. I think Andy Frisella was the first guy. He's kind of an aggressive kind of business guy in the States.
Yeah.
But then everyone, like I listened to a lot to Tom Bilyeu, Gary Vee, I was telling you about.
Yeah.
And there's loads of them. If you can find those people who are positive,
mm.
even if their agenda might be
slightly different.
To get you to buy something off them or whatever, like I can still now glean the positivity from them without getting sucked into their sales process. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I went to this whole process and I started changing my mindset. I started looking back in my history and I said like, okay, what can I take from that? What can I learn from that situation? How can I make that make me better? How can I make sure that doesn't happen again? And that really is kind of the mindset of changing kind of the failure into something that's positive. And I read a great book by Ryan Holiday. I don't know if you heard of it, The Obstacle is the Way.
Yeah.
And I came across the philosophy of Stoicism, and he says the obstacle is the way, and basically all the negative things that happen to you in your life, not just business in general, that if you have the mindset to be able to take that the negative thing or the barrier or the mistake that you made or the failure that you had and flip it into something that's positive, into a learning curve, and that's what I do 100% of the time now. So. When we're in our staff meetings, I say, we'll talk, what do we learn from that thing before?
Mm.
So we mismanaged somebody before. What did we do wrong in the situation? Because that was our fault. We made that happen. That person left the company because of something that we weren't doing, you know?
Mm.
So we have to take responsibility for the mistakes, number one, or the failures. And we also have to learn from the failures and flip them into something that's going to benefit us,
yeah.
and that we can use as a springboard and say, how can we get better at this? How can I become a better leader? How can we become a better team? How can we drive forward from this rather than creating resentment, which was what was happening before? That fucker did that on purpose. They left and did this and did that.
Yeah.
And fuck them.
Yeah.
And I hate them. And if I see them on the street, I'm going to, you know.
Yeah.
And all these things. Like, and I had that feeling for a long time because of that. I suppose it was entitlement. As a business owner, you feel that you're the one. Because I was working 5 a.m. to 11 p.m. a lot of days. I was burning myself out. And I was looking at myself, the hard work that I was doing, and resenting people who weren't working as hard as me. And then seeing them take stuff and then leave and then treat me with disrespect. And, you know, that's not a good place to be.
Mm.
And I think for me, becoming a leader has been something that's been important to me. And I believe leadership is something that you learn. I still, as a leader of my business, that I have to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, everything that I say and do And even this interview is going to be probably seen by some staff members, and I'm going to be interpreted in a particular way. And not that I'm not being 100% myself right now, because I am, and I'm being honest. But you know, the leadership qualities, you have to kind of lead by example, and you have to lead by doing. And that means I can't have resentment anymore. Yeah. I have to show people that I'm taking responsibility for that. That's my mistake, not their mistake, or not the team's mistake, it's my mistake. And let's work as a team to fix the issue and drive forward and move forward and become better and stronger. And that's what I mean by failure as a mindset.
Yeah.
And you know, like, I've had to learn that the hard way. I went through a period of deep emotional anxiety. Maybe it's not depression, it's just emotional. I think I have a good description, I can't remember, I call it emotional. It's a dysfunction, basically, of your emotions. And one of the most important aspects of growing as an entrepreneur is, I think probably the most important, is emotional intelligence and creating that emotional base. Because all that negativity isn't going to go away. All that stuff is still going to be there. You're going to have people who are going to do things to you that you're not happy with, and you're going to have things that are going to happen to you. And I think that's the most important thing that I've learned, that how to become more emotionally kind of intelligent from that aspect, understanding my emotions better, understanding other people's emotions or motives better. So why are they doing that? Why are they acting like that? Is it because of something that I'm doing? Yeah. Am I influencing that? And I'm still, like, it's a process.
Definitely. And I feel like that's something that you're probably always learning. I think everyone is. And I feel like that's, you know, your business life, your family life, your, you know, just random things. I feel like emotional intelligence isn't something that people put enough emphasis on.
No, I would have. It's only a realization. And this last year in particular, I suppose this last kind of 8 months, I went through a real in-depth personal development period, where I had to kind of like take a real good look at myself and look at the person I was and or I am, and kind of dissect myself. And you know, I think a lot of people perceive themselves as being amazing and brilliant and we do nothing wrong, and other people might not see that perception.
People will be, they'll definitely find things wrong. But
so I tried to understand, like, why, like, what is it? Is it a DNA thing? Like, you know, is anger or bitterness a DNA thing? Is that something that, you know, is just in my system, and how do I manage that? And I did a program called the Self-Altering Program, which is basically writing about your past, writing about your future, and writing about your present. It takes about a month to write it, but during that process of writing, I just had a release or an understanding or a clarity of why maybe I acted in ways, why I believe certain things. So about 8 months ago, I kind of like wiped every belief system that I had clean, and I'm trying to start again. As in, why do you hate politics so much?
Yeah.
Why do you believe that about religion?
Yeah.
Why do you believe that about the government? And everything that I was learning from a young age was from my father, from your parents, but a lot of that kind of negative stuff I realized I was learning from my father, that he was like, it's kind of like these subliminal messages hitting you as a kid. Oh, revenue are out to get you. The government are out to get you.
Yeah.
Religion is out to get you. Politicians are out to get you. It's all this like, why? Like, so I go in through school and I like, this is my narrative. I come out of school and that's my narrative. And I'm growing into that narrative all the time. And I'm trying my best to break that mold and just to kind of create my own belief system and my own understanding about what is real and what is real. Just like, you know, understanding marketing. So veganism versus carnivore diet. I don't know if you're aware, like, of the different diets, but like there's heavy marketing towards veganism at the moment, and there's also then the other side of the conversation about a carnivore and eating meat, and you know, there's very good arguments for both, which is wrong and which is right. I don't think either of them are necessarily wrong or right, but it's like who's got the most money behind them is going to win the race.
Yeah, that's true.
And having the emotional intelligence to be able to step back from that information coming at you and say, okay, let's decipher what's happening here, and let's not go become vegans just because it's being marketed at us. Let's have a rational, is veganism good for my body? Yeah. Is it gonna, how is it gonna affect me as an individual? Is eating meat good for me? And how is it gonna affect me? Do you know, so there's all these things, and I think like one of your questions later on, we're kind of going to, is about the hack, but like, I think it's, you know, I think people need to start taking more control of their own bodies.
I feel like we're probably going to move on to the life hack now, so yeah. Do you want to just go through life?
Yeah, so like, I mean, I'm big into biohacking and hacks in general. I don't really like the term hack, but like, yeah. Like I think what's happened is that as a society, and I speak mostly from a male perspective, that mostly men, that we've become very extremely soft, and that we're very, very easily influenced, and that we're not enough people are taking control of their minds and their bodies like they should. And you know, just because some doctor says that I should become a vegan because, you know, that doesn't mean necessarily it's right for me, who's paying that doctor to say that? So like, we have to take more responsibility for what we're putting into our mouths, what we're thinking, what we're saying, because we have to be able to kind of filter out all the stuff that's coming at us and all the junk that's coming at us and all the shit that you're seeing on social media. Mm. And that takes some deep thinking. That takes some self kind of awareness and understanding about, you know, yourself. And so for me, the ultimate life hack is taking control back of my body,
yeah.
Which I started to do over the last 2 years. Because if you look at me before that, I was a complete mess. Mm. And I was probably a knob, for the most part. I think I'm a good person, yeah. I'm a nice person. I haven't changed in 39 years, but yeah. Like, you know, you can, if you're not in control of your thoughts and if you're not in control of your body, then like, you don't react in the best way all the time.
Fair.
Speaking from my kind of experience. And so what do I do from a life hack? I wear an Oura ring, I wear Garmin, I track my metrics daily, as in so sleep has become one of the most important metrics. Mm. How do I sleep? What time do I go to bed? What's my routine going to bed? It's not perfect all the time.
Yeah.
How do I sleep? I wake up in the morning, the first thing is I read the data from my ring to tell me how many hours did I sleep, how was my sleep. And I'm not like using it as a gospel. I'm saying, okay, well, I've metrics there. They're telling me how I slept. How do I actually feel I slept last night? So I have that conversation with myself. And usually they're pretty close.
Yeah.
Sometimes your daughter wakes up a few times during the night, and sometimes whatever happens. Resting heart rate. You know, my father died of a heart attack, 57 died. I track my resting heart rate very closely through this as well. So I have a very strong, healthy resting heart rate. In August, I was had a resting heart rate of 47 beats per minute, which is strong for someone my age. I look at my heart rate variability, so how my heart rate varies, and that's getting stronger and stronger. And so I'm looking at these key metrics all the time, and you know, that for me is using technology to help you understand, is a life hack in itself. And you know, understanding nutrition, understanding what's good for your body. Like, I eat normally about 5 or 6 eggs every day. People think that's bad for you, but I know it's not bad for me.
Works for you.
Yeah. I love it. I love a high protein, high fat diet, and I try to keep my carbs a little bit down and stuff. So like, I'm in control, not perfectly, of what I generally stick into my mouth. Talking about meat, you know, is meat good or bad for you? Yeah, like, I think, you know, good quality meat, particular meat is good for you. I don't think processed meat is good for you, you know, like that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So take control of what we're putting into our body and see how that affects how you feel emotionally. We talk about mental health. I think most of it is produced by the shit food that we eat, and the lack of people going out exercising and taking care of themselves. Personally, I think a lot of mental health can be sorted by just sorting those things out. Obviously, I'm not an expert, so I don't want to go into mental health and stuff, but
yeah.
You know, I think like Keep Appy, who I was talking about, their app, you know, that's a positive app, positive capitalism, but they're not just a social company, they're also for profit.
Yeah.
And I'm 100% up for that. I think like companies need to be making a profit. So I've that's kind of life hack-esque. I'm actually going to the biohacking conference in Helsinki in November. So I'm interested to learn, like, this whole thing that I'm interested in is longevity and how can I live a bit longer? How can I, as an entrepreneur, how can I operate? Like, my true aspiration for an entrepreneur is to be able to operate a global company at the highest level as a business operator. And the only way I know I can do that is by keeping on the path that I'm going, but also keeping my body in tune so I'm able to operate at the higher levels. So, and that's important to me. So,
well, I'll be very interested to actually hear what that conference was like. So maybe when you get back, we'll have another chat. Your joke.
So, I'm not very good at jokes, as I was saying to you. But on holidays, my 5-year-old son came out with a few crackers. So I'll tell you the one that my 5-year-old came up with. So, what was the first animal in space?
I don't know.
The cow who jumped over the moon.
Classic. That's clever.
So I'll give that one to Charlie, my son. I don't really have. Some people have an ability to have
I just googled them and I thought I'd have a coffee joke today. So I how are men just like coffee?
No idea.
Best ones are rich, hot, and keep you up all night.
If that's what you're into.
Yeah, fair. Are you ready for your trivia?
Okay, I didn't know about this. What's this one?
So you've got 10 questions and you just try to get as many as you can. I've got a leaderboard and there's, like, the max anyone's ever got is 5.
Okay.
But there's plenty.
I'll try.
Yeah, but there's plenty who only have 1.
So I'm trying to change this real quickly just so I don't run out in the middle. Now.
Okay. What is the longest leap recorded by a kangaroo? In feet or meters, whatever your chosen metric.
I would say 10 meters.
9 meters.
Yeah, is that close?
I'll give you a 0.5 for that because I actually thought that'd be too. But that's 30 feet, like.
Yeah, that's big. That's I'm just measuring myself and guessing what the.
What is the longest movie ever made?
I think I know this. Ben-Hur.
No, it's called Logistics.
Oh.
It's 51,420 minutes long. That's mad. Which cells are only situated in the nervous system?
Mitochondria.
Neurons.
Oh. Damn it.
Which country is the only to reach 3 soccer World Cup finals but have never won?
Good question. Spain.
Did they won in 2010?
Oh shit, they did. Okay, one more go, sorry. God, I don't even know. Is it a South American country? Most of the European countries that have never won. Is there a time limit in this? You can give me 10 seconds. Gonna be very good guess. Colombia?
The Netherlands.
Is it?
The Netherlands, yeah.
Fuck.
Who actually, Spain beat them in 2010. So you were so close.
That's a tough one.
Have you seen the movie Taxi Driver?
Yeah.
What is Robert De Niro's character's name?
No idea.
Travis Bickle.
Some of my friends would know that.
Which continent covers the most area?
Continent? This is a trick question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wonder. Okay, so obviously I know the big continents, but is North Pole or South Pole a continent? It's not one of those.
I have a count for this one. Yeah.
Okay. You haven't.
No.
Okay. So continents.
I actually think this is bigger than it anyway. So.
Africa.
Asia. Takes up 30% of the world.
Hell, I'm doing shit of this.
Who was the only US president to ever resign?
Um, Nixon.
It is Nixon.
Yeah.
Nice. So, let me see what's next. What is the loudest animal on earth?
A lion.
Even though.
Loudest?
Yeah. Or produces the highest decibels is the.
Be a bird then, is it? Bear?
No, it's a blue whale.
Is it? Okay.
Which produces 188 decibels, and a rock concert produces 110. So.
Do you know what? That's in my son's buddy book as well.
He should have said the truth.
Yeah.
In ancient Greece, throwing an apple at someone was a declaration of what?
Death?
No.
Marriage?
Marriage, it is marriage. It's a marriage proposal. On a QWERTY keyboard, which two keys have raised dots on them?
I? Oh, raised dots.
No, the way that when you're typing, there's two of them have two little
oh, sorry, okay. On them.
If you can think of where you would put your fingers.
R? I have no idea.
F and J.
No.
I'll give you
right.
So you got 2.5 there.
Yeah.
Like, that's bang in the middle of what a lot of people get. Like.
I could have got 3.5. Could have got 3.5.
Yeah. Sure, look.
Competition coming out.
After your conference in Helsinki, I'm dying to hear what goes on in there. So maybe.
I bought a good book called The Biohacker's Guide.
Mm-hmm.
You should. It's expensive now. It's about 60 euros, but it's pretty comprehensive and pretty good.
Yeah,
just interesting if you're into that kind of stuff. I know a lot of people aren't into it, but. There's so many things that we can be doing just to improve our general health that aren't crazy. Like, one of the things I want to do more of is saunas.
Mm.
Like, Finnish men live on average 5 years longer than the average male because they sauna 3 to 7 days a week.
It's interesting.
And like on my last holiday, they had a sauna there, so I went in and used my Garmin. I put on a thing. It was for hot yoga or something, but I wanted to track my heart rate. And so your heart rate like goes up to, I think, was it like 110 or 120, but like it is like putting your body under stress.
Yeah.
And this whole thing about hormesis, you know, Wim Hof, and like, have you come across Wim Hof? So he's a breathing guy. And again, it's this whole kind of like, you know, obviously we need to breathe to survive, but they have this whole, these breathing techniques for, to help you kind of like relax and calm and to reduce anxiety is fascinating. But he does a cold therapy. So you do hot and cold therapy, they call it hormesis, where you're putting your body under pressure. And by doing that, it's making your cells at a cellular level stronger. And this is what they say anyway. Again, I'm reading into this and you know, it could be a lot of bullshit, but.
Mm-hmm.
And so like there's all these little things that you can introduce to your life. Simple things, I think, that are gonna make you live longer. And I think, it's not even living longer, it's actually in the time that we have living better, you know? And just like for me, it's kind of like 2 years ago, we have a sunken trampoline in our garden for the kids, for the small one. And like 2 years ago, I'd go out and I'd play with them and I'd be absolutely wrecked.
Yeah.
And that was embarrassing.
Yeah.
Like I played sports my whole life and I was turning into this person that wasn't kind of the person I was hoping to be.
Yeah.
As in I was overweight, unfit. I was losing my breath playing with my kids. And I was like, is that the kind of the person I want my kids to kind of use as a role model? And so now I can go out and like play with my kids and have energy with them. And, you know, I wake up early most mornings, pretty much every morning. And I'm always the first face that they see in the morning time.
Mm.
And like that type of stuff is important to me, you know?
Yeah.
Before getting out of bed, it was difficult. It was more like sluggishness. Like I'd have to get out of bed early if I had to get up for work or whatever. But.
Mm.
And now I'm up fresh most mornings. So, you know, it's all those little things in your life that, you know, as an example, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, when my kids were very young, like mornings were a blur to me. I don't really remember like a lot. And that was a mix that, like, it's not because I drank every day. It's not due to alcoholism, which I don't think I am. But like, it's just when you drink, you know, on the weekend, I don't know if you drink, but you know, you're hungover. And, or if you're eating shit food, I mean, you're not operating at a high level. And
your body's not functioning the way it wants to.
Just my memory of those years is hazy, and I'm pissed off at myself that those memories are just kind of like that.
Yeah.
And now it's for me, that's the important thing. The important things in your life, you know, like influencing my kids the right way and being a role model for them. And you know, I mean, you know, entrepreneurship is a lifestyle for me. It's my life, and like my family, and they're all integrated into it. It's not that entrepreneurship is there and my family's are there. It's like we're all one, and I want my kids to be entrepreneurs if they want to be. And you know, like I want that kind of flexibility for myself to be able to give it to them, you know. So that's it.
Well, I suppose we're probably going to finish up there. We're running right up to 11 now, so it's been a pleasure to have you on today.
Thanks for having me.
For everyone listening, we might try and do another one after your hack.
We can have a specific biohacking one.
I definitely go for that. But other than that, enjoy the podcast and see you soon.
Thanks very much.
Ba-da-ba-ba.